We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider. Brought to you by AT&T, a proud supporter of Carolina Athletics.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Adam, I feel very colonial today. For some reason, the 200th episode of the pod, a bicentennial. I feel like going and dumping some tea into the reservoir outside and enjoying my freedom.
I'm wearing my three-cornered hat, and I've got my trusty musket here.
Musket. I lit some lanterns to let Adam know it's time to record the pod.
One if by pod, two if by Twitter.
Three if by Podbox. So we're glad to be with you. We do have a fun show coming up. Adam, I'll talk a little bit about just catching up news-wise on what's been going on. Of course, we weren't with you last week. A lot of different stuff going on.
We were with you in spirit.
Yeah. We're always with you in your heart, in your mind. Yeah. I've been on the road with the Tar Heel Tour. Talk a little bit about that. There's been some basketball news as well. And whatever else we think about. Also, Adam, maybe one of the most exciting – I don't know if exciting is the right term.
I think it is.
One of the more fun projects that we have embarked on here on the pod, as we have a special commemorative pod 200 song that will drop here coming up in a little bit that I hope everybody enjoys.
Mixtape coming soon.
Because I'm going to tell you something, Adam. You know, when sometimes you have work and you procrastinate, you put it here, like, okay, yeah, I know I got to do it. You put it off. But then you have some piece of work that's really fun and you just put everything else, whatever, the kids need to be picked up, they'll find a ride. Let them thumb home. I need to work on this pod song. Everything else gets pushed aside.
It really did go from, this is a random idea that might be terrible, to the exclusion of all other people, places, and things in my life in like a second and a half. That's the kind of effort that went into this. So you can expect Grammys.
Yeah.
That's the lowest possible denominator for this. I've got a whole new respect for the people in that line of work.
So we will be dropping our Pod 200 song coming up in just a little bit. And Adam, a very special crossover edition of the pod. First time ever that we will have a Roadhouse Challenge on back-to-back pod episodes. But the reason this made sense for pod 200 is we've been trying to get this worked out. We're crossing over with a couple of Tar Heel football players, Jake Lawler, Zach Goins. Those guys have their own podcast called Inside the Film Room, where they break down movies. And quite honestly, Adam, they do it a lot more seriously than we do. We learned this as we were breaking down the movie that we go through the Roadhouse Challenge with them today. So we talked to those guys a little bit about themselves, about Carolina football, about their podcast, kind of how they got it started. And then we do a Roadhouse Challenge with them for the movie Big Trouble in Little China. What a wild ride that was.
I would highly suggest pushing pause and going to watch Big Trouble in Little China, because you're going to be lost and confused either way.
Yeah, if you watch it, you're not going to know what's going on. If you don't watch it and just listen to us, you're not going to know what's going on, because it's impossible to know what's going on.
I think probably better to be completely perplexed while actually knowing the names of people rather than just overall perplexed.
It's a unique Roadhouse Challenge, not just in the fact that we're crossing over, but in the fact that the movie made absolutely no sense.
And the people didn't get to vote on this one.
Yeah.
Jake and Zach just
they
decided.
They were our guests.
They decreed.
Yeah, they were our guests, and we let them choose. We let them choose the bounty for the feast, since they were the guests in our home.
And as we found out, I think it was really one of them that made the selection.
So we'll get to all of that coming up on what I have deemed just now, as Adam and I have started this pod, pod 200.
It sounds like this is going to be a chock full of pod.
Yeah. Adam, let's start with the Tar Heels, as we always do. And, you know, a couple pieces of big news on the basketball side of things. One, with the transfer announcement of Seventh Woods, and two, with the announcement of two grad transfers joining the Tar Heel program. But Adam, let's start with Seventh Woods. Gosh, I just hate it. I just hate that Seventh Woods is leaving the Carolina basketball program. He's such a nice guy. We've had him on the pod. You and I have both talked to him plenty of times. Very just a nice young guy. And I think from the basketball standpoint, my guess is with Seventh Woods, it's been a couple of things. Number one, as we talked about with him and as you and I have talked about him before, the injuries that he consistently had early in his career, I do think put him back some just in his growth. He just wasn't able to practice as much as he wanted to play as much as he wanted to because of the injuries, and I think that probably slowed him down some. And then he's just been behind some really talented players. And I don't think anyone would argue that Kobe White should have been starting this past year. Carolina has signed Cole Anthony, who has a chance, it appears, to play a whole bunch of minutes at that position this upcoming year. And so I am sure that that is something that factored into the decision as well. And overall, you just hate to see a young guy leave the Carolina basketball program, especially this late in his career, and especially somebody who was as quality a person as Seventh Woods was. Is, not like he's no more.
During the season, you do what's best for the team. During the offseason, you do what's best for the individual. And evidently, he feels this is best for him individually, and it looks like, based on the reaction of his teammates, they all understand it, support him, feel like he's doing what he feels like he needs to do, and certainly you hope he goes somewhere where he can contribute a whole lot of minutes, which I have to think is what he wants with his 1 year of college basketball that he has left, and that he's able to have a really successful senior season. I think you're right. I think he saw the writing on the wall that Cole Anthony probably was not coming here to back up Seventh Woods. And so if Seventh wants to start in his senior year, then I think that's probably the right call.
It also, Adam, just a reminder of how infrequently this happens at Carolina and in the Roy Williams tenure and before that as well under Coach Smith, although transfers in the world of college basketball have certainly become more prevalent in the last 10 years or so. But it just doesn't happen very often. And so it's a little bit of a shock to the system, I think, for Carolina fans, because you're not using – this is not somewhere where you have, where you expect two or three guys are going to be somewhere else after this season, because that's just how it works here. And that is the case at some places and some places nearby. That is not the case here. And so I do think it was a little bit of a shock to the system just in how unusual it was.
It's amazing how you build a college basketball roster in 2019 as opposed to even – like if you had told 2014 Jones – about this particular set of circumstances and all these comings and goings, 2014 Jones would have been flabbergasted. But now it's just sort of the course of business, and transfers have become more commonplace, and the restrictions on transfers in many cases have been lessened. And it's just the way college basketball is right now. But you're right, it really hasn't touched Carolina that much recently, going out more so coming in. So I think you said it best about Seventh. He is a great guy, and hopefully he is able to have the level of success he wants to have on the basketball court.
Adam, I have breaking news.
Okay.
The Tar Heels have officially signed Christian Keeling and Justin Pierce.
What?
While we're doing the pod.
Wow. I bet that they just wanted to be part of the pod. And they were like, look, guys, we got to go ahead and graduate if we want Jones and Adam to talk about it.
Got to make this happen immediately.
Huh.
So let's talk about these two gentlemen a little bit. So Christian Keeling from Charleston Southern, terrific shooter, high-volume scorer from the wing, something Carolina needed. I mean, Carolina needed some scoring punch on the perimeter, and – it seems as though this young man will help provide that. Now, of course, Carolina is a jump up from Charleston Southern, but I think what encourages you, at least in looking at what he has done for the Buccaneers, boom, Adam, is that he had the same – it wasn't like he averaged 40 points against nobody A&M and then 4 points when they played the Clemsons or the Georgia Techs or the Florida States of the world. He was able to score against most everybody that he played against. And so it's hard to teach shooting, and this guy can shoot. And one thing that I think has been impressive, at least, and again, I'm talking from watching film on him that I'm sure a lot of fans have watched as well, and sometimes highlight tapes can lie to you. He seems to make tough shots. Right? I mean, he makes open shots, but he can make shots with guys in his face as well. And hopefully – now that you're at Carolina, maybe you're going to get a lot more of those open shots than the ones with guys in your face. But it seems like he can make difficult shots as well.
Yeah, I think that's the encouraging thing, is that he's been good for a couple of years. So opponents have been game planning for him, and he's been the main focus of anyone who plays Charleston Southern for a couple of years. And as you alluded to, perhaps if he is one of the multiple focuses when you play North Carolina, that might create some even better opportunities for him. Had a triple-double last year, so he can do a little bit of everything. Seems like a pretty good rebounder, which, of course, we know Roy Williams loves. Academic All-Conference twice. We also know Coach Williams loves that. So going to be interesting to see where he fits. I thought it was so interesting that it sounds like Brandon Robinson was very influential in this recruitment, which I think says a lot about Brandon Robinson.
Heck, yeah.
Because if you look at it on paper – I would suspect some of Christian Keeling's minutes are going to come from Brandon Robinson. So it would have been very easy for Brandon Robinson, this recruitment, to go, hey, man, I don't know. This play isn't that great. I got to tell you, they got this radio guy who plays 2K and he shoots with the stick and not the button. Everything's all crazy. But it sounds like Brandon was very influential in getting Christian Keeling here. And so I think that speaks well of both of them.
Then you got Justin Pierce, Adam, who comes to Carolina from William & Mary. And I think the most intriguing part about Justin Pierce is his size, his versatility, and his rebounding ability. And that's not to say that he can't score or won't score for Carolina, but I think you've got a guy who's, what, 6'8", I think, is that right, in that area for Justin Pierce. And so all of a sudden you can probably plug, but he can step out and shoot as well. Kind of that stretch four that you need to have now in today's world of college basketball. And so gives you some size, some versatility, some more rebounding punch. And this has the potential to be and Carolina, as we know, is a very good rebounding team traditionally. this seems to be a team that could be a really, really good rebounding team. You've got Picott, you've got Manley, you've got Brooks down low, you've got Huffman, who's a good rebounder. Pierce has had good rebounding numbers. Keeling, as you mentioned, good rebounding numbers from his position. We have heard Roy Williams say he feels like Cole Anthony is the most complete point guard he had. That includes rebounding, although we also know in the Tar Heel style of things, the point guard isn't necessarily heavily involved in that area. But a lot of guys who seem to be good at that, and something that could be a strength again and a big-time strength again next year for Carolina.
I think the good thing about Justin Pierce is he gives you even more flexibility. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Choo-Choo.
Yeah, that's right.
Black, who can play a lot of different roles and also rebound some for you. And it sounds like Justin Pierce can do a lot of different things. Another academic all-conference guy. And parents played collegiately. We know Coach Williams likes players who – either are sons of coaches or come from a basketball family. Justin Pierce does. So you're not going to have to explain to him, okay, here's the X's and here's the O's. He knows all that stuff already. So, again, we always talk about fit. Both of these sound like very good fits.
Man, is that the first time that's ever happened on the pod?
Yeah, I think so.
Had to break the news?
I mentioned to Coach Williams when I was walking in, hey, we're getting ready to do the pod. If you could get these guys signed.
Yeah. If you could go and officially do this so Jones and Adam can say their names,
yeah,
that would help.
And he said, well, guys, I want to make that happen. We always talk – people always talk about recruiting and who's good at recruiting and who's not. Brad Frederick sneakily turned into a very good graduate transfer liaison. We know, of course, that he was big with Cameron Johnson – and Carolina would not have gotten Cameron Johnson without him. My understanding is he's been big in other situations as well that hopefully will be beneficial to the Tar Heels. And so recruiting's not always going to the Peach Jam and sitting there on the sideline from 8 a.m. until 7 p.m. Sometimes there's other aspects of it too, and I think you have to you got to realize that Coach Frederick has become very good at that.
So – it is amazing, Adam, in the span of about 2 weeks, the difference in Carolina basketball's roster for next year. Just totally, the outlook totally changed from a year where you go, man, they may be a little low on numbers, low on guys that they feel like can go out and give them quality minutes, to now all of a sudden you start thinking, man, this is a team that if – and there's still a bunch of ifs and maybes because you just don't know with so many new guys. But it's a team that you feel like has a chance to be pretty good.
You can at least hold a practice at this point.
Right.
Which a couple weeks ago there was some doubt as to whether you could scrimmage. And so that is a step in the right direction. And it'll be interesting to see. There's a couple health questions that'll need to be sorted out over the summer. But by the time the fall gets here, I would certainly think people are going to be excited to and there's a little because there's a little more of the unknown. There's a little more excitement to see them out there on the court and what actually is there.
Right.
It's not like the last couple of years where you feel like you've seen most everyone. This time, Carolina could put a five on the court that you haven't seen before, potentially.
One thing that or a couple things I've heard Coach Williams say just about some of the new players, because, again, I have heard him speak a bunch on the Tar Heel Tour. Talked a lot about how impressed he has been with Armando, and he says Picott. So maybe it's Picott.
I asked someone in the basketball office, is it Bacot? And they said, I don't think so.
Okay. We're going Picott until told differently.
Okay. Lafitte.
That's right. He talked about how impressed he's been with how much better shape he is in physically. And how he's really changed his body and how that has then affected his game in such a positive way. And I haven't seen him 1 second. No one has against college competition. But he seems like somebody who could really be successful at Carolina. Just the type of player that Roy Williams has had a lot of success with in the past.
He seems like the kind of guy who Carolina's played against a couple times in recent years.
Right.
And you sit there and during a timeout or something – of course, Eric's always watching the big guys, and we all kind of sit there and look at each other and go, man, if that guy was at Carolina, he'd be really good.
Yeah.
I think Picott might be that guy.
And one other note, he mentioned in talking, he being Roy Williams, talking about Anthony Harris. And we talked about this some just after the release was sent out about how he mentioned his competitiveness. And he has mentioned that every single time he's talked about Anthony Harris. And he said, you know, he may not be the best shooter or the best this, but he's going to go out there and get after it. And you can just tell he's – and he's – oh, we've gotten Tough Little Nut in there already.
Already?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I think we maybe got a Tough Rascal out there about him. Mm-hmm. So he – I would think Anthony Harris, if he continues along that path, will be somebody that Roy Williams really likes. Because – according to Coach Williams, somebody who is uber competitive and just gives it all he's got to make it happen.
That is intriguing.
Yes.
And that's high praise.
Oh, yeah. When you get Tough Rascals and Little Nuts out there already.
You're in Raymond Felton zone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me tell them more about Tar Heel Tour because I've been there. Adam, another thing that has stood out to me is just the excitement for Carolina football. And I know that's something we've talked about a lot here, but to go out and see it, to see it in person, to see the physical manifestation of it has been impressive. And people are fired up. And, you know, Phil Longo's been at a couple events, Carolina's offensive coordinator. Tim Brewster was at an event in Chapel Hill where we had one of our Tar Heel Tour stops. And by the way, Tim Brewster, he could have been up there by him. He could have hosted the program. He actually told me when I could talk when he was up there speaking. It was pretty funny. So he was terrific. You see why he is regarded as such a terrific recruiter. And Mac Brown's done a couple, and as we are recording this, he has a bunch more that he is about to do coming up later this week. And people are just genuinely intrigued, excited, fired up, re-energized, and it's all because of Mac Brown. It really is. And the way that he can sell the vision, the way that he has built the staff, just all those things, people are so fired up. And I don't even know if he said one or if anybody has said any kind of like piece of breaking news or real insight, but it doesn't matter. People just they're eating it up.
People want to believe in Carolina football.
Yes.
They want to. There's all that talk about, does Carolina have football fans? Yes, they want to be football fans. They just want something to believe in. And that is, as we have said, one of the things Mac Brown is very best at is making you believe it. And even some of the players we've had on have talked about he makes them believe.
Yeah.
So you know if he can make them believe, he can make Johnny up in Section 108, Row EE, believe that the Tar Heels at least have a chance. Not that they're going to win the college football playoff, although I wouldn't rule it out.
No, maybe not in year one.
Perhaps not. Maybe so. You never know. Get a couple breaks.
Undefeated.
That's right.
Right now.
Get a couple breaks. Anything's possible. Not necessarily win the college football playoff, but just have a chance. Have a chance to go have fun at Keenan Stadium. And right now I think people feel like they've got that chance.
Seen a bunch of pod fans out on the Tar Heel Tour Road. Particularly in Charlotte, had a bunch of pod fans there. It was funny, Bubba Cunningham was up speaking about, you know, new coaches and new facilities and all that different stuff. And he mentioned the new media center. And I looked out to the crowd, and there were a couple people who kind of gave each other, like, the knowing, like, mm-hmm. I think Ryan Cook was there. He was one of them. And our friend Carolina James and Matt Stark were there. And all of us were just kind of like, mm-hmm, you know what he's talking about. We all know. I know you know that we know about what he's talking about.
And we know that it's important.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Adam, that also leads to the fact, of course, that Carolina's made a new hire in women's basketball. Courtney Bangert. I think that's the right way to pronounce it.
Hi, guys. I'm going to stop the pod right there for just a second for a couple pieces of information. Number one. Since Adam and I have recorded this pod, I had the opportunity to meet Coach Banghart. That is the right way to pronounce her last name. And let me just say, she's a superstar. If you're a Carolina women's basketball fan or just a Carolina fan, you are going to be very excited with her leading this program. So I wanted to make sure we got the proper pronunciation in there on this podcast. And this came out a little bit later than we thought it was going to. And so, since it is a Thursday when this pod is dropping, longtime listeners to the pod know that since it's Thursday, we have to remind you.
Here we go. Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday. Throw the ball. Thursday. Thursday.
All right. A lot of good stuff still to come here on Pod 200. Let's get back to the show.
Is Carolina's new women's basketball coach. She has been the head coach at Princeton for the last 10 years. And on paper, and from hearing other people talk about her, it seems like a really, really, really good hire. Somebody who has been very successful at a place that has a high academic reputation, deservedly so. And one of the most impressive things to me is the fact that she was named one of the Fortune whatever top 50 leaders in the world or something in 2015 or whatever that list was, Adam.
I think she was named Emperor of Planet Earth, but I might miss it by a little bit.
So, I mean, that's pretty high praise. And so that leadership aspect, I think when you're coming into what I think we can agree is a tough transition for at that position, somebody who is going to be you needed somebody not only who knows basketball and is going to be successful in that side of it, but a really high quality leader as well. And it appears that she is that.
I have not met her either. Certainly we hope and think we might in the future.
That's right.
But like you, everything I've read, I've watched a couple of videos from Princeton about her and by her. She just seems like she knows what she's doing. I realize if you're the head coach at North Carolina, you probably do. But it's just every aspect of everything from how to run a program to the actual coaching of the team to after the players graduate and leave the team and come back. Everything about it seems like she understands how to do. And I like that she sort of worked her way up. She didn't just begin her head coaching career as a head coach at Princeton. She's done a little bit of everything, and I think that helps when you're coming to a place that is going to need you to connect with people because kind of like football. The potential is there, but the people are not connected right now. But she seems like the type who can connect them.
Former player at Dartmouth University, something like a neuroscience major, so obviously a very intelligent person on top of everything else.
Former pod guest Carol Folt, I think, was her biology teacher in her freshman year.
Yeah, that's right.
I bet that was a tough class.
Yes. So, again, seems like a terrific hire for the women's basketball program, and I know there are a lot of steps. Yeah, still have to hire staff. I mean, there's still a lot of steps that have to happen. Still the very beginning of that tenure, but seems like a very positive move forward for Tar Heel women's basketball. And as Adam alluded to, hopefully we'll get to learn more about that in the near future. Adam, anything else on your mind Tar Heel-wise? I know, you know, spring sports are going through either in the postseason or about to get into the postseason. Baseball has a couple weeks left, I think 2 weeks left in the regular season. They are tied for the division lead. Softball is in the ACC tournament this week. Both the tennis programs advanced to their respective Sweet 16s, so they're still going. The golf programs are in their regionals. So spring is traditionally a very strong time for Carolina athletics, a lot of good teams, women's lacrosse heading to the NCAA tournament. So, you know, a lot of good teams for the Tar Heels this time of year, and that is continuing.
And a little bit of off-field news as well that I think oftentimes gets overlooked at this time of year. Steve Kirshner sent out this release last week that Carolina led the ACC public schools in APR recognitions for the third consecutive year.
Yeah.
So 9 UNC athletic programs earned the recognition awards from the NCAA for outstanding APRs. That's the third straight year Carolina's gotten the most among any public school and ties Rutgers for the most awards won by any public school in the Power Five. So that's something that usually people only complain about when it's not good. And so when it's good, a lot of times it doesn't get any attention. So I thought that was impressive. And the fact that there are so many of them speaks to the department as a whole and not just, oh, this one team did a really good job.
Anything else Carolina-wise that you want to talk about before we get to our Pod 200 song? You have a list, I believe.
I do.
And we have our crossover Roadhouse Challenge all still coming up.
Wow, that's a lot. We better get to it.
Let's go to Adam's list
first. Okay.
What's on the top of Adam's list? brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Okay, we need to clean out a few things about the Days of Thunder Roadhouse Challenge before we get to the next Roadhouse Challenge, which is imminent. Most importantly, well, I can't rate my kids. Among significant importance, Chris Williams sent us a current photo of Harry's barn, which is in Mooresville, North Carolina. Not Morrisville. I know everyone gets that confused. Mooresville, so near Charlotte. The barn does not appear to be in great shape right now.
No.
But would I stop and take my picture there? Yes.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
No doubt.
So thank you for sending that to us.
Would you, when you stop to take the picture, would you like stop outside your car and talk to it for a second?
Yeah.
Be like, hey, we're going to keep this trip going in just a second. I'm going to get you filled up with some unleaded 89 here soon. Don't you worry.
I'm going to get you on the Roadhouse Challenge. Boy, there's a lot of Cary Elwes fans out
there. Well, okay, hold on. So you're right. We have been taking heat for mispronouncing his name. And everybody then, almost the first thing they all say is, he was in The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know he was in The Princess Bride. I've seen the movie. I know that he was Dread Pirate Roberts. I get it. However, I admit I did not know how to pronounce his last name.
Roberts. It's not hard. Not Robert's.
Yeah. So, I apologize, Mr. Elwes. I mean, if you looked at his name, would you say Elwes first?
Clearly, I would not.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody was acting like it was just me.
Yeah, I think it was because they were so delighted that you would pronounce something wrong, because you're always on your pronunciation high horse.
Pronunciation.
Yeah, that. You're on your high horse, and so they wanted to knock you down a peg or two.
That's what it was.
I didn't know there were so many big Cary Elwes fans out there, but one thing I have now learned, there are. Also, Allison Duty has her fans, by which I mean Dusty Tompkins.
Yep.
Who sent us an email that said she's not very well known by name, but she played the enigmatic Dr. Elsa Snyder in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, which Dusty believes is the best Indiana Jones film, not only because, but especially because of Sean Connery. He also points out that it's Cary Elwes, and in addition to The Princess Bride, he was the cut my foot off to escape guy in the first Saw movie.
Didn't see that.
I did not see any Saw movies. And don't ever plan to. That's not my cup of tea.
I'm looking up Allison Duty right now. Okay, yeah, maybe I know who she is.
Ruth Ann Woodley said that as much as we like Robert Duvall, we know that I love Robert Duvall, you should check out the Lonesome Dove miniseries, also from around 1990, she thinks, and she believes the most wonderful of his many wonderful performances. I vaguely remember knowing that Lonesome Dove existed, but I did not watch it.
I also, Jeff Mullen sent us a follow-up email, because remember, he gave us the T-H-S-M-L-L.
Rolls right off the tongue every time.
Trademark. And he had the word about Todd Turner, and we assumed that it was former NC State AD Todd Turner. He said, no, just a buddy of his named Todd Turner.
Well, and he asked if... Well, I don't think he said. He said it's possibly the same Turner family. He didn't know what little Todd's dad did for work. Maybe he worked at IBM, or maybe he was the athletic director at NC State, whatever. Yeah. And he wanted to know if I knew if that Todd Turner lived in Cary in this specific subdivision where Jim Valvano lived. He did not. So I believe that may answer our question.
What are the chances that there's two people in the world named Todd Turner?
I've never heard of one prior to now. I don't know why it would start. Okay, there was a lot of news on the Katrina front while we were
I'm so glad you brought that up. I had forgotten about it.
Her daughter, Nakia, tweeted us multiple times.
Yeah.
I feel like Nakia may have just found out that her mother was a celebrity.
Yeah.
That's what I would expect of Katrina, though, is to keep it under wraps. You don't need to go around bragging to everybody.
You're not going
to
be showy about her gritsness.
You don't go around bragging that you're an international superstar.
Right.
You just let it come out naturally, which evidently it did. So we got some tweets. But then also, Terrell Joy went to the Blue Plate Cafe in Memphis and got his picture with Katrina.
Yep.
Which I can only imagine was a magical moment for them both.
Can I tell you that it literally made me smile when I saw it. I said, oh,
yeah,
Katrina.
Yeah.
And it was just a nice, heartwarming moment. I'm looking at it right now. It makes me happy.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that now she's been able to share it with her daughter.
Yeah.
It's a family show. And her daughter seemed very excited that her mom was a celebrity, as you often would be.
Yeah.
I just thought that was, it was a nice moment for everyone. Other pod celebrities who have had big weeks, Rebecca Black was on Jeopardy.
I did not know that. Oh, there was a question about it. Right. I thought you meant she was competing.
No.
I got really excited for a second.
No. Yeah, Friday was a clue. And the guy who's dominating everything got it right, of course.
Well, no surprise
there. Probably because he's a pod listener.
Yeah.
Okay, we had Shannon Potter had a big question about her horse's name. Mm. She, I guess their farm had purchased a horse, and the name of the dam, Jones, was Cameron Crazies. Mm. And so Shannon was looking for other horse names, which had something to do with that.
Sure.
But she did not. She wanted it to be pro Carolina, not pro Duke, because Cameron Crazies is. She apparently does not like the Blue Devils.
Gotcha.
And so they're looking for names for this horse. So we put that out in Twitter land, and boy, there were some great ones. Not all of which can I read here, but Ben Johnston especially had some good ones. He suggested perhaps Preseason Champ, Hands Bros and One. It's Hands Bro.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Danny's Greener Pasture.
Ooh, I like that one.
Luke's Double Double. And then a few others as well that were also humorous. So I don't know what they finally ended up deciding to name the horse, but I do plan to do some journalism and find out what it was. Because I think we all would like to know. Because as we know, anything can happen in the world of horse racing.
Yeah, that's right.
We've all seen it.
Yep.
We got an important email from Kate Leslie about UNC competing at the Ultimate National Championships in 2019. Not like Ultimate, like these are the be-all, end-all championships, but the championships of Ultimate, which I have now learned based on her email, you don't call it Ultimate Frisbee because that makes it sound not as cool.
Yeah, only a rookie would do that.
Yeah. So this is the first time in program history, Kate believes, that both the UNC men and women's teams entered the postseason ranked number one in the nation in Ultimate.
We're the ultimate ultimate.
Yeah. Both teams have a shot at winning, which means a UNC sweep, Kate says, is actually possible and totally exciting.
Yeah.
Watch out for national MVP nominee Rebecca Fagan. She is an all-caps beast.
Mm.
So keep an eye on those Ultimate championships because the Tar Heels might win. I don't know if they can officially be the Tar Heels in Ultimate.
No, remember.
Carolina might win.
Carolina.
Yeah. Congratulations to future pod guest, I'm sure, Chase Rice. Mm. Eyes on You, the number one song in the nation this week on Casey Kasem's Top 40 Countdown. This long-distance dedication goes out to Chase Rice.
Man, Chase Rice.
What an incredible life he's led. I think we've talked about this before. Carolina football linebacker, as we know.
NASCAR pit crew.
NASCAR pit crew on a championship-winning team.
Survivor.
Survivor. Co-wrote Cruise, which I'm guessing the royalties are still coming in for. Then, as he said in this article I was reading, he feels like he kind of messed up for a couple of years. He didn't do what he wanted to do with his career. Changed record labels. Now he's got the number one song in the country, Eyes on You. Which actually came out a year ago and just now went to number one.
What up, Chase Rice?
Nice job, Chase Rice. Eric Lytle sent you some information about shoes for a seersucker suit. We're getting a little, it's getting close to decision time.
Yeah, about a month out, a little more than a month out.
Well, and also he wanted to criticize us for not mentioning John C. Reilly as a star in Days of Thunder. Mm. We did. We said that guy who's in the movies with Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
We just didn't say John C. Reilly.
Didn't have a major role, but had a role.
Yeah. Eric also says Show Me Heaven is still a great song. Eric has been thinking about your issue with wearing the right shoes with a seersucker suit. You do need to be careful, advises Eric. I have a seersucker suit, he does, and he pairs it with a navy blue pair of Bucks. Mm. Not off-white. It works well and doesn't show dirt. And he wouldn't wear a brown leather belt. Get yourself a light blue cloth belt.
I do have a cloth belt. I've got one of the ceiling roof GOAT 23 belts. Are you wearing it right
what?
Now?
What?
You're wearing it right now.
Yes, I am. I mean, I'm not wearing yours.
Yeah,
I'm
not
wearing mine.
Yeah. Do you think that would work with it?
I don't see why not.
I think mine's navy. Is your Carolina blue?
Yeah.
Hmm. Fancy.
So that's Eric's recommendation. He would go navy blue Bucks.
Okay.
I don't necessarily even know what Bucks are. I think that's it for the list.
All right, we're about to get to our interview / crossover pod Roadhouse Challenge with Jake and with Zach. That will be brought to you by AT&T, proud supporter of Carolina Athletics. More for your thing. That's our thing at AT&T. Of course, you know you can see the impact that Tar Heels make every day in North Carolina. Learn more about what's happening at UNC by visiting unc.edu. It is golf, man. It is. We're right in the first quarter of prime golf time, and you know what that means. That beneath the longleaf pines in the heart of North Carolina is a place where golf is more than a game. It is a way of life. That, of course, is Pinehurst. And it and its summer tea package are waiting for you. Adam, so now we have our crossover pod, and we still have our Pod 200 song. I'm going to let you make an executive decision, Adam. Should we leave the Pod 200 song for the end, or should we play that now before we get into our crossover pod?
I think everything leads up to Pod 200 song.
Okay.
It's on top of the mountaintop.
Understood. So let's get to our conversation. Jake Lawler, Zach Goins. Now, again, we talked some with both these gentlemen about Tar Heel football, about their individual journeys, about how they started their podcast, and we really encourage you to check it out. It's called Inside the Film Room. They'll tell you during this discussion the best ways to learn more about it. And then we go into a very special crossover Roadhouse Challenge for Big Trouble in Little China. Let's get to it, Adam. The first ever crossover pod right here on the Carolina Insider. Adam, this one has been in the works for a while. We've been discussing this. We've been trying to make it happen. Finally, we got all our ducks in a row. And for the first time ever, we're doing a crossover pod.
The people have been clamoring for this for months. That's no lie. We've been receiving numerous tweets, possibly all from one person, but that's okay, saying that this needed to happen, and now it's going to happen.
So joining us here in luxurious Mobile Pod World headquarters, we have two Tar Heel football players. We've got Jake Lawler, and we've got Zach Goins. Now, Jake and Zach, did I say that last name right, Zach?
Yes.
I don't want to add an extra G, which sometimes I do. Jake and Zach, or Zake, if you want to combine them.
Put them together.
Yeah, we shift each other.
I understand. They run their own podcast called Inside the Film Room, where they break down a bunch of movies. As you know, Adam and I are expert movie reviewers with the Roadhouse Challenge. And so what we decided to do is all four of us have watched the movie, and we're going to get to that in a second, and we're going to give it a very special crossover Roadhouse Challenge. Adam, are you excited about this?
I've been excited about this for quite some time. Have you guys seen Roadhouse? That's how this all started.
I have not.
Zach, you haven't seen Roadhouse.
Have you seen actually any movies?
I get that all the time from Jake because he is the one. His parents have shown him so many great movies, all the classics. My parents grew up. When I grew up, they watched whatever I wanted to see. So right. I didn't get the influence like Jake did. So I'm still catching up.
So we're going to get to all that in a second. But, guys, first of all, how did you guys get started doing this, and how did you create Inside the Film Room? Kind of how did it all come about?
Yeah, so I think we had been reviewing movies separately on each other's Twitter accounts, and, you know, we had been typing and tweeting some responses and kind of initial thoughts that we kind of gathered from watching these films, and we thought it was pretty cool. I know Zach had been writing on a blog for a little bit before I had, and I kind of found a niche market in Twitter because, you know, 140 characters, people can read that.
Sure.
And then our media team, UNC's media team, wanted us to do kind of a co-review on Infinity War, which had come out last year. and we agreed and we did it on video, and we thought we kind of worked together. Our chemistry was well balanced, and we, you know, Zach had mentioned in passing, let's start a podcast doing this.
I had just finished up with the audio journalism class in the J school, so like we'd talked about it, but now I finally knew how to actually do it. So it seemed like it was the great time to do it.
You know, now it's, what are we, like 37 episodes?
It's almost our 1 year anniversary coming up soon. Yeah. So
no big deal. This is our 200th episode of the pod right
here. What an honor to be on for such a monumental episode.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Have you enjoyed it? I mean, has it grown more than you thought it would? I mean, just what's the experience been like?
Yeah, I mean, we started it, and as like we say this all the time, that for us it doesn't matter if one person listens or if 1,000 people listen. Like, obviously we'd like to have 1,000 people.
Sure.
But for us, it's just all about something that we enjoy doing, and it's just good practice for us because I know we both want to eventually pursue careers that have to do with entertainment and film. So being able to get our thoughts out there and kind of talk about it with each other, someone who sees things from the same perspective and sometimes different perspectives, that's usually our best episodes.
Yeah,
But it's just something we really enjoy doing. And like I said, it doesn't really matter who our audience is.
I think people are always kind of surprised when student athletes have an actual real life outside of football and whatever sport they play and possibly class. How do y'all have time to do this? And what do you like about making time to do this?
I think, you know, it's just a matter of time management. You know, it's like you do have a rigorous schedule, athletics and academics, but you know, there is time, and it's just about how you use that, and it's about how effectively do you use that. And if you're able to get your stuff done in a kind of a timely manner, in a timely fashion in which it will be your best work, then you can move on to other things. You can move on to extracurriculars because, you know, I think, and I think we both think this, is that it's important as an athlete to be a multifaceted person and to kind of have depth and have skill, and because you're not going to be playing this game forever. So you want to leave with a portfolio that you've created, and especially doing that from the constraints of being an athlete is going to look highly upon other people. So, you know, it's just a matter about how you use your time. I mean, everyone has the same 24 hours, and you just got to use it right way.
I was sitting here thinking, like, wow, Jake's, like, super thoughtful and impressive. I don't know if he's going to fit in here with what we're doing.
When we started it last summer, we ended up doing – it was like a season, 10 episodes over the summer, and then we ended up taking a break for the season, the actual football season. It kind of helps when you see a movie every Friday night before a game, so give you a little material there. And then once we finished up the season – I think it coincided pretty – we were planning on coming back in January, but then we got a surprise Avengers trailer for Endgame.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So we're like, screw January. We're starting right now. And broke that down. And then once we got back from break, just got back into things.
All right, two questions. What's been the favorite movie that you guys have watched and reviewed? And then secondly, which one has been most popular with your listeners that people enjoyed the most? And maybe it's the same thing.
I think one of the most fun – not the best movie, but which was last summer we saw Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which was terrible. And so we just spent probably 45 minutes just tearing it apart.
Nice.
You know, some of our listeners thought it was a little bit biased,
right?
But I mean,
they hadn't heard the one that we're about to do, so maybe that's gonna be even better.
But so that was a lot of fun. And then popularity wise I think there are two that people really liked. When Incredibles 2 came out last summer, we did a Disney Pixar bracket, and so that —
nice —
separate from the review itself, but that kind of gave something that everybody, whether they'd seen the most recent movie or not, has a strong connection to and strong feelings about. And we had some guests on there. I think was that Fat Mello was on that episode, so, and he's a character, Jeremiah Clark. So having that, getting some controversial opinions out there, it gave people some good material to argue with us on Twitter.
What do you think, Jake?
I think for me the most fun that I probably had was, I really loved doing the Upgrade one. I thought that was great. Upgrade was kind of a lower budget film that came out in June. It was a lot of fun. I thought the Hereditary one was great too. And I think the most popular, definitely the Disney Pixar one. And I think the Rewatchables, where we went back and rewatched National Treasure and kind of gave our thoughts and different opinions about that. And people really liked that one too.
So, Zach, you are about, as we are recording this, by the time it comes out, it may have already happened. You are about, you are about to graduate. So what's happened with the podcast? Let's talk about important stuff.
That's one of the things we've been looking into over the past couple weeks. We tested out one episode over Easter break where we were in separate locations, found some good software to try and do it remotely, and it worked out pretty well. So we're going to try and keep doing it as long as possible. Otherwise, it could get messy if we have to break it up. Who gets control? Yeah, who gets custody of the pod?
I was about to say, those are never easy.
But we're going to keep try and keep running it as long as possible.
I keep wondering why Jones keeps sending me real estate listings for other towns, and I'm not sure why.
How about personally, Zach? What are you wanting to do now as you're moving forward after your time here at Carolina?
So I've been a journalism major the past 4 years. As you can tell, really passionate about entertainment and pop culture. Trying to look for something more on the writing side. I've focused in reporting. So something with either a magazine or a website, I've been applying all over. So if there's any listeners out there looking for a passionate entertainment reporter, you know, I'll send you my resume. Got to plug a little self-promotion there.
Adam's a writer. Yeah, Adam, give Zach a job.
That'll get you nowhere, Zach.
We can get hired right now.
We can add a movie column on GoHeels.com.
Yeah, there you go.
If the people need it, the people need it.
Before we get to movie stuff, Jake, tell us a little bit about spring ball. Obviously, new feel around Carolina football. Just what were those couple of weeks like, and what have these last couple of months been like?
Yeah, it's really been amazing. It's been kind of a whirlwind transition, and it's been really one of the easiest that I've probably been through in terms of coaching changes. Mac Brown has been amazing. I mean, everything. He's one of those guys where everything he says, he will do. And, you know, he's never going to lie to you. He's always going to tell you the truth, and he's going to be kind with you. And I think the most important takeaway, which people don't see, is that he kind of allows you to be yourself. He allows you to do different things, and he kind of pushes you to pursue things outside of football because he realizes that there's an expiration date on that career as well. You know, we have guys like Michael Carter, who's a tremendous photographer. Tamon Fox is a brilliant artist. And, you know, a lot of people want to do a lot of different things, and he allows you to kind of do that. And then in the same respect, you know, he asks a lot out of you from the football side and the athletic side. And I think that the staff that he's created is going to help us win a lot of games because they are so kind of, they are so willing to work with you. They are so kind of experienced, and they're ready, and everyone's eager, and the energy is much higher. Everyone's much happier, and it's just a great feel around Carolina right now.
Speaking of Mac Brown, this thought just crossed my mind. We need to get him on the podcast and do a special TV episode about his time on Friday Night Lights.
Oh.
I think that'd be a great interview.
We love Friday Night Lights.
Oh, yeah.
I was rewatching it a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, wait a minute. I know that voice.
Yeah.
That's the right. First episode. About
yeah.
That.
First episode. He's a booster in Texas.
Oh.
Jake, show. When we had Coach Brown on a few weeks ago, as you can imagine, he's not very good in this format at all. he mentioned that he wanted to try to meet with every player before the summer just to kind of see where things stand. Have you had that meeting? And if so, what did you take from that?
Yeah, he's met with all of us. And what I took from it is that, you know, he's as genuine as people believe him to be. And he's never going to lie to you. He's always going to tell you the truth. He tells you exactly where you're at, what you need to work on, what you need to do to get better, what they can do to help you in any respect. Because at the end of the day, it only works if, you know, this is a cohesive unit. It can't be sort of kind of like hierarchical. We have to have people that are working in kind of unison and harmony. And he understands that. And he realizes that he's going to give you everything that you need to be successful, but it's a give and take. You have to be able to kind of do the same weight and pull your weight around. And I left that meeting very kind of inspired and very enthusiastic about where we're headed. So,
all right, before we get to our Roadhouse Challenge, I want the 2-minute recap of the Zach Goins story and the Jake Lawler story individually, from how you got here, kind of the experiences that you've had thus far. Zach, we talked to you a little bit about where you want to go eventually, but tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to this point.
Okay. So I went to Weddington High School just south of Charlotte, was recruited by Gunter Brewer since pretty much my sophomore year, and ended up making the decision to come here as a preferred walk-on. Came in the summer about 6 days after graduating high school and never looked back. I mean, one of the biggest questions in my recruiting process was wanting to find somewhere that if fall ended for me, it would be somewhere that I would be happy. And I knew that Carolina was that place for me. And I mean, it was definitely a challenge being a walk-on on the football team, but I wouldn't have traded it for anything in the world. The people that I've met and just getting to be a part of something bigger than myself throughout my 4 years was awesome. I mean, had some great ups in freshman and sophomore year, getting to go to the ACC championship, the bowl games, all kinds of stuff, and then some lows in my junior and senior year. But at the end of the day, it was a great experience.
What are some of the challenges of being a walk-on that people don't know unless they have done it?
Right. So I think this is almost unique to the people that were in my class, because for me, I came in as a receiver. So I was with Coach Brewer my freshman fall, then switched to DB in the spring. So I had Coach Warren, and then sophomore year, Coach Joseph, and then junior, or and that was for going into junior year, I guess, and then going into senior year, Coach Baker. So I had four position coaches in 4 years.
Yeah.
And for a walk-on, the whole thing about your relationship with your coach is building that trust. And when your coach is leaving over and over again, you have to start from scratch every single season. And it's right when you get up and your coach trusts you and they think they can put you in or put you on special teams or something like that. And then it just starts all over again. So that's a very difficult challenge that most people probably don't really think about.
Sure. Jake, how about you?
Yeah, so I grew up in Charlotte as well. I went to South Mac High School. And before South Mac, I really didn't play sports at all. I had read a lot. I'd like watch movies, read comic books. That was really kind of my world, and I was never really cognizant of sports and really what they could do. And then on a whim, I had tried out for the football team in middle school, and I was kind of like a manager. I didn't really like it. And then ninth grade came around, and I tried out again, and I had made it, and they'd put me on varsity. And I really didn't know what I could do. I didn't know what an offer was. And then I got my first one my sophomore year, and it just kept going. And then I was honored to kind of get the chance to see all these different schools and get offered and get recruited. And then finally I made my choice here, and I'm ever so grateful for it because it's been a tremendous experience for me. And, you know, I've made friendships that will last me for the rest of my life. I've made relationships that will last me for the end of my life. And I've really figured out what I wanted to do with my life, which is after football, I want to become a film director. And I don't think that if I had went anywhere else, I might have found that path. So I'm grateful for my experience here.
That is such a unique, I mean, the fact that you didn't even really, not just play football, but not even really care or know much about it. I mean, so what changed that for you in that time period?
I think for me, it's...
Look at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I started, I was like, 6 feet even, and I was like 150 or 160, and I'm 6'3 and 240. So it's been quite a transition.
Funny story, Jake and I have known each other since high school. We trained together back in high school.
Yeah.
And it was my senior spring of high school, so I was getting like training to get ready to come up here. And I saw him in the gym for the first time, and I asked our coach, I said, "Where does he play?" Because I thought it was a college student that had come back and was working out on break. And because he looked like this as a sophomore in high school.
Right.
And it was ridiculous. And then he's like, "Oh, yeah, that kid's like 16. But that, ever since then, we've just become really good buddies. And, and that's kind of led to where we are today.
But I guess to your original point, I don't know. I think I wanted something different. I was always kind of an outcast. And I was like always kind of like to the wall. And like when people would go out playing sports, I'd be inside like reading and, you know, in the library, like stuff like that. And then I'd grown into my body, and I've kind of become more athletic. And I decided to try it, and I just kind of fell in love with working out. I loved working out. I liked, you know, the camaraderie that was shared, because I never really had that before, because I was always kind of solo. And then, I mean, I love competing, and I love the games, and I thought it was fantastic. So
many of the people we talk to on this podcast, the thing they're most passionate about is the thing we're talking to them for, whatever sport they play or whatever. How do you balance? It sounds like you're passionate about some things that are not football, and you love football, but you're also passionate about some other things. How do you balance those things?
I think it kind of, not necessarily time management, but it is management. You know, you have to realize that I am here to play the sport. Without me playing the sport, I would not be here. And I love it, and I love the coaches for extending me this opportunity and keeping me on kind of the team and allowing me to be this. And, you know, I love what I do. I love waking up and knowing that I play for the University of Carolina. I mean, it's a truly special feeling, and it's a feeling that not many people play. But at the end of the day, you have to realize that I'm more than just 14, you know. I'm more than just an outside linebacker, and I will always be more than that, because I've always been more than that. And knowing that, you know, I do this, but I can also do these things as well. And yeah, I want to make movies. You know, I want to be able to tell stories for kids that were just like me. And if I can use football, or if I can use film to kind of enrich and inform each other's identities, then that's exactly what I'm going to do.
You mentioned outside linebacker. So it's a little bit of a different world now on the Tar Heel defense with Coach Bateman. I'd just be interested in what that transition was like and how you were able to get your arms around what you guys are going to do defensively.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Bateman is amazing. I mean, he knows everything. He knows exactly where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there. He knows the right calls to make. I mean, it's just to be under someone's wing like that, who knows so much, is just going to help everyone out. And making that transition, it wasn't really that much of a difficult transition because we're still pass rushing and we're still kind of playing the run and doing all these things. But dropping back into coverage is a different animal. And something that, you know, me or Chris Collins or Tamon Fox relatively have not done for the majority of our careers.
But here. He's locked down.
Yeah, strap
up. I passed my DB skills on to him.
There it is.
But, you know, making that transition has been relatively – with Coach Boone, who's our outside linebackers coach, with Coach Mason, who's our kind of defensive analyst, and Coach Bateman have all kind of helped us out. And it's been a relatively easy transition. Even though it is a change, it's been a welcome one. So.
What kind of stories do you want to tell? You mentioned you want to tell stories for kids who were like you.
Yeah.
Like what?
So growing up, I was a cinephile, and I still am to this day, and I loved movies. I love because I'm, you know, being the outcast, you know, I kind of grew up wishing that I had nothing else, and movies allowed me to do that. But growing up and coming here, I realized that most of my heroes were white, and you know, the only stories that I knew were, you know, ones of white. And you know, for a young black kid, the only things that I could really be were, on movies at least, were, you know, a slave or a gangbanger, a drug dealer, different things like that. And now, you know, with movies like Black Panther and Moonlight, where there's so many different identities for African Americans, I want to be able to kind of continue that and show that, you know, you can be a superhero, you can be a doctor, you can be kind of anything like that. Anything you want to be, you can be. And, you know, media does a lot to kind of help portray that image. So I just want to help, you know, kids like me who can see heroes that look like them on screen and kind of continue that trend.
We've already agreed that once he makes his first movie that he's going to come to me and I get the exclusive first viewing, first review.
Nice.
We will continue this relationship in professional life.
That's good because I thought you were going to say that you had agreed he was going to cast you. And I was going to say, Zach, I'm not sure that's going to mean what we're going for.
All right. Are you guys ready to go through the Roadhouse Challenge?
Let's do it.
The Roadhouse Challenge.
J.C. Penney is coming here because of me.
Today.
Wait a minute. I'm a reasonable guy, but I've just experienced some very unreasonable things.
It's all in the reflexes.
Okay. You people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. And if we're not back by dawn, call the president.
Okay. So the movie selected, Big Trouble in Little China.
You guys have no notes. This concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, oh yeah,
I've
seen it seven times.
Must be nice to be young and be able to remember it all.
I've got the IMDb page pulled up.
Yeah. So. Oh yeah, that's key. Okay, so here are a couple important notes. Now, this is a movie that had been suggested to Adam and me to go through the Roadhouse Challenge voting process. It yes. hadn't made the list yet,
right.
But it was in the queue. So this is one that we had already been suggested. Then when Jake and I started talking about trying to figure out, make sure this, to see if we can make this happen, I asked Jake, I said, well, we kind of look at older movies. Is there an older movie? And this was the first one that Jake suggested. So it all just came together beautifully to make it happen. All right.
Just like the movie itself.
Yeah, that's right. A beautiful masterpiece when it's all said and done. So, first, let's just go through this. Big Trouble, Little China, 1986. How did you watch it, Adam?
I watched it on my laptop with my mouth agape.
Zach, how'd you watch it?
I streamed it on Amazon.
Okay, so did I. Jake?
I watched it on the DVD I bought when I was 11.
he's got the limited edition, collector's edition. Yeah.
Jake just like, oh, hold on. I know exactly where that thing is.
Just right under the mattress. Just keep it right there.
So no X-ray for this, Adam.
Yeah.
On the Amazon. It had limited X-ray, but not like the full notes.
Good.
X-ray.
I'm glad. So we're on even footing.
Okay. Let me read the description of...
There's some great hyphenated words
oh, yeah.
there.
Let me read the description of Big Trouble in Little China for you. It says, Kurt Russell stars as truck-driving tough guy Jack Burton in this mystical action, adventure, comedy, kung fu, monster, ghost story film about the imaginary world under Chinatown where ancient Chinese ghosts and evil spirits dwell.
I'm sold.
Wow. How could you not watch that?
How could this not be appointment viewing?
I mean, it doesn't matter what your interest is. There's something for everyone. Yeah, in that description.
Everybody.
So what we normally do on this is I kind of go through like a 10,000-foot description of the movie, kind of through from start to finish. We throw in notes and comments, but I'm going to tell you something. This movie was almost impossible to do this with because I didn't know what was going on at any point in time.
Exactly.
This was, and I'd be interested in everybody's opinion on this, the most confusing movie that I've ever watched in my entire life.
Well, I could agree.
And Jake, as someone who is an expert in this field, my question throughout my viewing experience was, do they know that this is what it is? Or do they think they're doing like Masterpiece Theater?
Yeah.
And only now, 30 years later, do I know how bad it is? So, did they know in 1986 what they were doing?
Well, I think you have to understand with John Carpenter, who did The Thing, who did Halloween, who did Escape from New York, and, you know, he is, by all accounts, a renowned and tremendous filmmaker, is that he is completely aware of every choice he makes, and that this movie isn't made as a serious film. And it's made as a serious analyzation or analysis of different kind of subgenres, and it's subverting and kind of troping and satirizing everything. But it's made to be as absurd as you saw it. And John Carpenter, I don't know him personally, but
no?
I just called him the other day. I was like, we're reviewing Big Trouble.
Hey, JC, what's up? We're talking about Big Trouble in Little China.
I'm going to sit in the fancy pod headquarters and talk about your movie. I need some quick thoughts.
But, you know, everything that I've read about him, every film that I've seen from him, he is completely aware and he's completely kind of cognizant and, you know, he understands what films that he's making. And I think, you know, as absurd and as outlandish and as crazy as this film is, there's always a method to the madness, and there's always a method to his madness.
It took me until the scene where Kurt Russell drove the truck into the alleyway the first big fight. That's when I finally realized, oh, this movie's just ridiculous.
He drifted into the
yeah.
Oh, you didn't find that out in the opening monologue?
No, it really. I sat there and I was watching. I was like, okay. I mean, I can't. You got to understand, it was the '80s, Jake. Things were a little different. So I was like, okay, this is gonna be a little different movie. But it took me until what, like 20 minutes in or 15 minutes in for that fight for me to finally go, okay, this is just a ridiculous film. Now I got what's going on.
I was amazed that Kurt Russell had driven his tractor trailer into...
You talking about the Pork Chop Express, Adam?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, just want to make sure.
That he could drive it into Diagon Alley 30 years prior to Harry Potter coming to the screen. I didn't understand how he had done that. But clearly, because he turned into like a 6-inch sidewalk.
Yeah.
And there was an entire planet back there.
It was impressive.
Oh, you didn't know that this was a prequel?
Yeah. It all made a lot more sense when I started thinking about it like that.
Yeah, you just have to contextualize it.
John Carpenter
is
J.K. Rowling's other alias. Yeah.
So. All right, so Zach, you are in the same boat with Adam and me here,
right,
where this was your first viewing.
Right, I had to text Jake afterwards, and I said, I'm pretty sure that was a parody, but can you confirm? So I was definitely in the same boat.
All right, so give us your impressions of what happened.
Yeah, so, you know, there's Kurt Russell, and he's trying to flirt with the lady at the airport, and then I guess that kind of gets him dragged in when the other lady gets... there are so many names in this movie.
Dude, there were so many names and so many people, I couldn't keep them all straight.
And the only one I knew who it was Kurt Russell, who I kept calling Kurt Russell. I didn't even care what his actual name was.
But, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot that unfolds here. I mean... The kidnapping, the rescue, all the fight scenes, the electricity between the hands, the out of the mouth and the eyes.
Yeah.
Like, great CGI, you know. I think that's
a
really
little heavy on the
there.
Special effects. Yeah. I enjoyed my two favorite things about this movie. Number one was that Kurt Russell was so obviously in on how ridiculous it was.
100%.
And some of the lines that he delivered, which I want to get some of your favorite lines here in a second. But some of the lines that he delivered were unbelievable, just
amazing.
In how ridiculous they
amazing.
Were.
Right.
It's going to take Cracker Jack timing, Wang.
And then two, my man Wang Chi, who was like, that's like his guy, right?
Yeah,
that's
his boy.
Yeah. Doing the backflips and all sorts of...
And so it's like anytime there was trouble, Kurt Russell and Wang Chi are sitting there, and you expect Kurt Russell, because he's the main character in the movie, to be the one who does everything, and actually
he's
he does
just
nothing.
Sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah, he actually he loses his knife, or the ceiling collapses in on him, and he's out for 5 minutes. And Wang Chi's the one who's taking care of him.
Right.
I enjoyed that aspect too,
for sure.
Yeah, I mean, talking Wang Chi, my favorite,
which we all should. Yeah.
Probably my favorite scene is when I can't remember which of the the henchmen it is, but when they're going back and forth and then they end up just like flying through the air next to each other, and while they're flying,
they're horizontal to the ground. That was amazing.
Phenomenal.
Adam?
I've got a couple thoughts about the early part of the movie. First of all, I think we can all agree airport security was not great in 1986. In
we're just letting a street gang just walk in there.
Yeah, and everybody knows they're the street gang, too.
Yeah, like they're everywhere they go, like, oh, you're the street gang. Like, you
looking,
have no
they're
other
looking
identity.
For a girl with jade eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So did they just go all every time there's a flight coming in from somewhere in Asia?
And they're like, check.
Let me check the eyes.
Do a retinal scan when you walk through. By the way, okay, hold on. I just got to tell you, the two gangs, I had to write this down. Yeah. The Chang Sings and the Wing Kong. Do I have that right?
You do, yeah.
Very confusing. I couldn't remember which one was which.
Wait a minute. Which one's the Lords of Death?
I would assume the bad guy.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Lords of Death were boys with the Wing Kongs. I think. Is that right, Jake?
So. I believe so, yeah.
Okay, all right. So I think they're a subsidiary of the Wing Kong.
Yes.
It's just a whole enterprise.
The first time I laughed out loud was when the...
was when it was over and you're like, what did I just do for the last 90 minutes?
The bad guys were in their Trans Am.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they were
yeah.
sitting three across. Then you cut to the girl in the back, and she had the most confused look I've ever seen,
other than my own
personal look. And like the one bad guy had the glasses with just the tiny slit. Is that efficient for being a bad guy? Can you see it when people are coming at you?
Keeps you focused.
Yeah, he's locked in. It's tunnel vision.
You only need to see what's right. Are the eyes green or not?
That's
Adam,
all
this
you
is
need.
The
That's
only
all
question
need.
We have.
I really enjoyed when we had the big shootout during the funeral, in which they first target the casket.
Yeah, yeah. I was expecting somebody to pop out of there.
I was too.
Like, hey guys, you can save your bullets on that one. So there's all these...
The gun CGI, amazing, too, by the way.
We were talking about it that Kurt Russell, when he finally gets the gun, it's like a little submachine gun, but it's like...
But he's shooting... Yeah. I expected them to put the word pow up there. Like
some old Batman stuff.
Like in the like starburst that was coming out of the gun. I'm sorry, Adam. I cut you off.
But so they're firing off these thousands of rounds all around the Pork Chop Express. Then we cut to Kurt Russell in the Pork Chop Express, and he's holding a knife. What's your plan, Kurt Russell?
And I think the single greatest line in the entire film is, of course, from Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
And it's when they're about to embark on the final rescue mission, and he says, if I'm not back by dawn, call the president.
I wrote that one down. But what about the whole thing? He goes, hold the fort.
Yep.
Keep the home fires burning, and if we're not home by dawn, and then he gives him like the, like the wink,
The exaggerated '80s wink.
Yeah,
I like that.
Amazing.
I bet on the page of the script it had like, then Kurt Russell gives sassy wink, and then says, "Call the president."
He might have improv'd that one.
I think he improv'd it. He was so bought in. It was method acting. He became Jack Burton.
Okay, you people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. And if we're not back by dawn. Call the president.
All right, Zach, favorite line or two from the
film? Yeah, another great Kurt Russell one is when I think it's – I can't remember who it is, but somebody – that they're going down underground and he shoots somebody for the first time. And he goes, is that your first time plugging somebody? And he looks around. He's like, of course not. And then just keeps going.
All right, my two favorite were both near the end of the movie. And there were a couple that are not repeatable here on the Carolina Insider that I really enjoyed, including when they found out the wall was hollow and then he just cut through it. But two that I really liked is they're like trying to make their escape and they get to the door or whatever. And he goes, all right, we're all going to go out of here at once. One, two, three. And he opens it and all the bad guys are there and he just closes it again and goes, we may be trapped. That was quality.
All right, we're almost out of here. Now, from here on, it gets pretty normal. Offices, storerooms, a nice false front. I count to three.
Hello, if I want you.
I open that door. We move out.
Everybody got that.
Ready? Follow the leader. One, two, three. We may be trapped.
And then I enjoyed it after they had... What was the thing that they drank where they all took the shots before they went
in? That was like their magic potion.
Yeah, magic potion.
But did they get any superpowers? I don't
Or was it all mental?
They're flying through the air.
Yeah. They were doing that beforehand.
If you count that as a superpower, Zach, they were flying through the air.
Terrific. A six-demon bag. Sensational. What's in it, Egg?
Wind, fire, all that kind of thing.
Here's to the Army and Navy and the battles they have won. Here's to America's colors, the colors that never run.
May the wings of liberty never lose a feather.
But when so he had drank the stuff, they were maybe two-thirds of the way through their big win at the end, and he's standing there with Kim Cattrall, who we haven't even talked about yet, and he says, I can see things no one else can see, and then he stares at her for a second and goes, why are you dressed like that? I did laugh out loud on that one. I thought that was funny.
Hey, don't worry, I can handle him. I took something. I can see things no one else can see. Why are you dressed like that?
It was right after that he shot the floating eyeball.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And then like the
Which
other
makes
guy
total
him,
sense if you saw this movie.
Well, the other guy gives him like the "What are you doing?" look, and he goes, "Never know until you try."
That was another. Like, I was wondering if there was some like Star Wars-esque reanimation here, because at least in my version, the floating eyeball looked like far and above better like animation than everything
than
else.
That other monster like big like.
And so that was just like a big suit that, like an actual prop. But then the floating eyeball, like, I don't know if they kind of pulled a Star Wars with Yoda and like went back and reanimated him. So I'd like to see an original version and see if it's the same.
And I will say that the first time watching this film, it's a completely mind-boggling experience, but the second time watching
I'll agree with that.
It is probably the funniest movie I've ever seen.
Okay.
Just watching it.
As someone who, why is it? Because this movie did not do very well, shockingly, in the theater.
And now it's a cult classic.
Yeah, but now it has totally brought in the cult classic moniker, like The Room. Although The Room, I think, was actually trying to
actually
be
right, yeah,
right, or like Rocky Horror Picture Show or whatever.
Yeah.
So, Jake, how does that happen? Like, why is this now so funny? Why is this something that you have a DVD and have watched 11 times or whatever?
Well, I think the great thing about this film is that it knows. Once you see it the first time and then you see it again, you're completely aware that it's so absurd, and it knows it, and it's playing into it unbelievably well. I mean, Kurt Russell is a madman. Everyone in the film is insane. It's like some of the most absurd kind of plot and narrative structure that you've ever seen, but in crazy way it all works, and it's all so funny. And if you watch it knowing that it's meant to be that way, you'll have a much better time. And I think people realize that. It's like they would watch it, they'd walk out of the theater and be like, what the hell is that? And then they'd come back when it's on DVD, because like, I'm never watching that again. And they'd come back and they'd watch it, seeing it the first time, and it's like, wow, this is unbelievable. This is
Embrace
Kurt Russell.
The absurdity.
Exactly. Yeah. This is Kurt Russell at his most, like at his most Russellillian or whatever you want to say. This is like the quintessential absurd 80s movie. It analyzes so many things while being careful not to disrespect anything, not to disrespect any traditions. And it's just completely invested in its insanity that you have no choice but to laugh, because it's so funny.
I think I told Jake this, that for me, I'll have to trust you on the second viewing thing. I don't know if I'll get around to that, but I'm like in the middle ground here, because either I saw this too late, where if I was a child and I saw this, I'd just be able to turn my brain off and fully like go with everything. Or I don't have the background in kung fu movies to realize like all, like you were talking about subverting all of the classic tropes of those movies, that I don't know what they are. So I can't tell like what's being flipped on its head or what's being parodied. So like, I'm kind of in that no man's land between where I just am really confused the whole time.
Zach, I'm glad you said that. You and I are living in the same neighborhood with this movie.
Well, it's funny because I like the movie so much more sitting here
than when
I was watching it. When I hear y'all talk about it, I'm like, oh, I kind of like that. But at the time, I was like, oh, I never want to do this
again. Yeah, I thought the first two-thirds were I did not like. And then, like, the last 30 minutes, the fight, that's when you kind of, like you said, you just can embrace everything. And that was fun. That was a lot of fun, and it was ridiculous. But yeah, first two-thirds, maybe just rewatch the end bit.
And I think on a technical perspective, the action is very good for the 80s.
Really?
It's very good. I think the fights are very good. I think because once you watch it knowing how crazy it is, the fights are actually well choreographed. The performances, knowing that they're insane, are really good. I mean, you know, when Wang Chi's like, my mind and spirit were going north and south when he's trying to cut the bottle. And he's like, what are you talking about, man? And it's
like, there's a lot of like, secondary characters we haven't even gotten into. Like the journalist, the guy that has the crush on her. We haven't even talked about David Lo Pang yet.
And, I think the great thing about this film is that it allows so many people to be so crazy. And if you know it, watching it like that, because, you know, Kurt Russell, who's supposed to be this tremendous action hero, I mean, he was in Escape from New York, and he was in The Thing, and he's been in all these, like, and he's, like, the 80s, and he's completely useless in this film. And he's such an idiot. And it's like, you know, watching him being someone, being so himself, but so kind of, so unbelievably helpless, it's a completely different experience.
Zach mentioned secondary characters. I wanted to ask a question about Gracie Law.
Okay.
Why does she talk like a 1950s private eye?
Was that the emerald eyes, the jade eyes?
Gracie Law.
Why does she talk like that?
You know, and I think that's kind of, you know, harking back to what we were saying about kind of analyzing different things. It's about, you know, back in the old movies, every reporter...
You know, Adam, the ones that you would watch when you were a kid.
You know, back in the older movies, all the reporters would be like, oh, did you see that, Sonny? Let me get a quote from you. And that's like, she is the pure representation of that. And there's so many different kind of iconic archetypes in that film. You know, there's the 80s action hero. There's the kind of Bruce Lee-esque figure. There's the reporter. There's everyone that's just confused. There's like, including the audience. There's kind of like the old, centuries-old villain who kind of has this sort of ambiguous plot to do whatever
with. It's
kind of
a Beauty and the Beast type story.
Yeah, it's actually a love story.
That's it's a Disney movie.
But, you know... Because, you know, John Carpenter, I truly believe that he was fully aware of everything when he made this film. And he was trying to kind of, I think it was more a critique on movies itself, like big Hollywood blockbusters itself. And, you know, watching it like that and knowing that he's critiquing the entire industry while he's making this film, it leaves a much more satisfying conclusion.
Adam?
That's a little more thought out response than what I got, which was, I guess Kim Cattrall wasn't a good actress yet when she was doing this.
Oh, I just remembered another great line where he said, I know you'd go, but there's a problem with your face. I thought that was a good line, too.
I go with you.
I know there's a problem with your face.
All right, sorry, Adam.
I also,
Kurt Russell. Gave a little Billy Ray Cyrus vibe in this movie.
Yeah, with the business and the party in the back.
Really good dedication to the mullet. And he was jacked in this movie.
When he took that jacket off, you know, things were getting serious.
Yeah. He was ripped in this movie. Well, good for you, Kurt.
And you spent the first hour and 20 minutes wondering why he had on the high boots. And then he pulled out, like, the knife or whatever of his boots.
Like, wow.
It all makes sense now.
Speaking of the knife, the knife and David Lo Pang, we haven't talked about it, but one of the most ridiculous scenes in the movie is when he throws it, he catches it, he throws it back, catches it, and then hits him right.
Yeah.
It's all in the reflexes.
It's all about the reflexes.
Yeah, right? I mean, that was the clue.
It's all
in
the reflexes.
Yeah. Just caught it, threw it
straight
right
back, between the eyes.
Right between
the
eyes.
And that knife was probably in Kurt Russell's mouth for the majority of the movie.
And it looked like a kitchen knife. Like, it didn't even look like a knife I would take to a fight.
It's velocity. That's what matters.
Pure speed.
I thought it was nice that he was getting married at a North Carolina State Fair ride. That's exactly what it looked like.
With the mouth entering the
neon skull. We're gonna, all right, close your eyes. It's gonna be scary.
Oh man,
that was a theme wedding.
Yeah. Adam, anything else before we give it our Roadhouse grades?
We have not touched on the fact that one of these individuals had the same powers as Emperor Palpatine from Star Wars, in which he could shoot people with the electro rays from his fingers. I always thought that had only been confined to Star Wars.
They went to the same store.
Isn't it Palpatine?
I don't know.
I think it's Palpatine.
Yeah, come on, Adam.
Wow. Wait,
let me tell you a little something about Adam. Adam can't pronounce anything right. So, like, for Christmas this year, I literally got him a book of pronunciation so that he could go
in
there.
Yeah, but Palpatine's not in there.
I understand there's an E on the end of Palpatine, but it's still Palpatine.
I think it depends on what part of the galaxy you're from.
Yeah, you know,
it's
a native thing.
It's colloquial, that's what it is.
Right, yeah. In the southern part of the galaxy, they call him Palpatine.
It's like caramel and caramel.
I'm glad Jake's here.
Got a little muscle to back you up.
Yeah, that's right. The guys with the lampshades on their heads.
You talking about rain, thunder, and lightning?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was supposed to be intimidating, I gather.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's that one scene where he's just, like, looking. I think the camera shoots through that.
Underneath.
You can see through, like, the straw hat.
I did enjoy how they actually seemed to have the weapons from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Oh, yeah. Like, one dude actually had size that, like, Raphael used to have, remember? And they had the swords, and they had the stick.
Let's talk about the, I believe it was Thunder, he was the last guy that just blew up.
What was that?
I believe that was
I like how every question I just looked at Jake like, Jake, what was that about?
What? That was like,
let me think.
Jake's like, I'm tired of being the smartest one here, guys.
When I looked up the movie, I think that was like the preview picture on IMDb of his face like completely blown up, and I was like, what am I about to watch?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that John Carpenter, what he did is that he just went to every production warehouse in LA and just took everything from every movie that you've ever seen before and was like, we're putting that here, 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 and here, and you guys are going to completely understand.
Yeah. It's all going to make a beautiful stew.
We have had a terrible oversight that we have not mentioned this line. So Kurt Russell starts up the Pork Chop Express.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Big rumble sound. And she goes, what was that? And he goes, 6.9 on the Richter scale.
What was that? 6.9 on the Richter scale. Hang on!
Jake, the next time you make a big hit on the field, you need to, like, stand over him and go, 6.9 on the Richter scale.
I mean, it is, by all accounts, one of the most quotable movies of all time.
What lines have we missed?
I just love his opening monologue when he starts
and the
off.
Closing one on his little speaker
on the CB.
He's talking on the CB radio, he's like, what are you saying? He's like, on this dark and stormy night. He's like, this guy's 6'8". I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, did you mail the check? Yes, ma'am. The check is in the mail. I'm like, what is
what
going
do we
on?
Think happened at the end there? Because you see the like Bigfoot fellow climbing out of the truck.
I think it's just opening up the possibility of part two.
Well, you know, there's talk about a part two.
Yeah.
Is there really?
With the Rock.
With the Rock being the lead.
Sign me up.
Okay, I found it. This is by far the second greatest line, because I still love to call the president. When some wild-eyed, 8-foot-tall maniac grabs your neck, taps the back of your favorite head up against the barroom wall, and he looks you crooked in the eye, and he asks you if you paid your dues, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Jack Burton says at a time like that. Which, who is at a time like that? Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir, the check is in the mail. Which sums up the entire movie, really.
When some wild-eyed, 8-foot-tall maniac grabs your neck, taps the back of your favorite head up against a barroom wall, and he looks you crooked in the eye, and he asks you if you've paid your dues, well, you just stare that big sucker right back in the eye, and you remember what old Jack Burton always says at a time like that. Have you paid your dues, Jack? Yes, sir, the check is in the mail.
So, how we grade our movies here on the Roadhouse Challenge is we give a certain number of roadhouses. Zach, this can be hard for you if you haven't seen Roadhouse. So there's only one movie that can achieve a 5 Roadhouse mark. That's Roadhouse, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
So, Jake, if a Roadhouse is 5, what do you think this movie comes in?
4.5, for sure.
That's big time.
For sure.
Roadhouse.
So 4.5.
I mean, because Roadhouse is just as absurd as it. Well, no. This is absurd.
But at least in Roadhouse, I could follow what was happening.
Yeah. And you know what? I love kind of like the 80s, like quirky, weird films, and Roadhouse is definitely a part of that tradition, and so is this one. So I got to give it a 4.5.
I will say, just the big difference to me was at least Roadhouse, and a lot of these movies that we do, like, I can follow what's happening. Right. This movie, and again, you talked about it eloquently a few minutes ago, but on the first view, like, I had no idea what was happening at any point in time, so it was a little disconcerting. All right, Zach, if you understand it can't be a 5, what do you think this one is?
You know, I don't know about Roadhouses, but just rating it 1 or 0 through 5, I gave it a 2.5.
Okay.
Probably a 2, but then the half star just for that last 30 minutes, it won me over.
Roadhouse.
Adam?
I've been so conflicted about this because I gave Top Gun a 4.
Yeah, well, of course.
Well, I don't like this movie as much as Top Gun, and Top Gun is close to maximum 80s, But I feel like this movie might be more 80s than Top Gun.
Oh, it's got to be more 80s.
So I was leaning towards 4.5, and I'm not just saying that because I want to be teammates with Jake.
Roadhouse, 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 Roadhouse.
I'm going to go on the other side of things, boys. I'm giving this one a 1.5.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Roadhouse, Road.
You're not going to give it a 6.9 for the Richter scale?
That is a hot take.
Now, granted, I didn't watch it till late at night, which honestly probably should have helped me in enjoying this
movie. I think that's what it's meant for.
My mind should have been more open for this. But I was so confused and so lost throughout this movie that maybe that speaks more to me than anything else. I'm going 1.5.
And, you know, I understand that. But just make sure you pay your dues when some 8-foot-tall wide-eyed maniac comes to be a barroom wall.
By the way, I am. What is whatever date that this airs? I'm making the proclamation right now that when Jake makes a big hit next year on the field, I am going to say on the radio that it's a 6.9 on the Richter scale. That is my promise to everybody in this room that that's going to happen.
There may maybe going to be a handful of fans out there that get that reference. Just the loyal listeners.
I understood that reference.
Yeah, that's right. Guys, thank y'all so much for coming over. Okay, if people want to listen in, if they want to learn more about y'all's podcast, what's the best way for them to do it?
So we're on Twitter at Inside Film Room. We tweet some polls, always tweet our episodes, some good content there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. So those are the best ways to get to us. We have a Facebook page, Inside the Film Room. So give us a follow and a like and subscribe.
What we have talked about doing as well, and obviously with Zach leaving, it might be a little bit harder, but we'll find out, is we want to maybe do this again and us come over and be on a episode
awesome.
With you guys, and maybe we can pick the movie.
Do we get to pick the movie?
Yeah, then we can pick the movie, and then we can all maybe do something over on we can cross back over, and we double cross at that point.
Forget Avengers, the most ambitious crossover.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Guys, again, thank you so much for giving us some time today, and really enjoyed it, and look forward to do this again soon.
Definitely. Thank you for,
having us.
Adam, I think. And we appreciate Jake and Zach because they came over here to talk with us in Pod World Headquarters, had a great time with them. I think you got a nice window into the lives of student athletes in that, yes, these guys are people who play football or basketball or field hockey or whatever, but have a lot of other stuff going on too.
And are very good at the other stuff. I realized after the fact, I don't really believe my ranking. But Jake's enthusiasm was so darn infectious.
He sold you on it.
He did. And as soon as he walked out of the room, I thought to myself, wait a minute.
I've just been hoodwinked.
But, I mean, it's on record now. There's nothing I can do about it. But that's how much enthusiasm he had for that movie.
Yeah.
As we know, he watched it on the DVD he's had since he was 11. really enjoyed getting to talk to those guys. And I bet you they're going to do big things.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Speaking of big things, Adam, we have a little ditty here to finish out the show, our Pod 200 song. So Adam and I had put our heads together. How can we properly celebrate the 200th pod? We thought about different ideas, kicked some cans around trying to figure it out, and we came up with this. We're going to let – man, how are we going to order this? We're going to play the song – then we'll let Jake and Zach get us out of here, along with the RZA, post-Pod 200 song. Does that make sense, Adam?
I thought it was nice that Billy Joel agreed to do a See You Later, Big Grits as well.
Yeah, maybe not going to have that one. So here's our Pod 200 song. Hope you enjoy it. Then Zach and Jake will get us out of here after that on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
In low power mode, Tar Heel Tour is on the road. Pat Green, baby face, Leaky says retweet. Adam can't pronunciate, Jones's Christmas will inflate. Grape nuts, what up, soda poppin' ski. Eric Church, Farmer Brown, going mobile round the town. Top Gun, Theo's shoes, Cam is drinking pickle juice. Kobe White, Little Jerp, Mr. Pickle, it's absurd. Singing Patrick Swayze, Christmas, I don't even want this.
The pod made it to 200. Not sure how it's still around. The pod made it to 200. We're hashtag grinding, you keep subscribing. Red Panda's dropping plates, arms crossed, serious face. Army, Navy, Pinehurst, Zion is a park. Kevin Bacon's anger dance, go to late night with no pants. Adam hates roundabouts, let's pod after dark. Cookout potties, Barry versus Teddy V, Freddie Kiger, Lefty, onesies and Rebecca B, Coach Doe, Leaky Train, taking classes with Shane, Luke May, Friday, mascots are in Jones's way.
The pod made it to 200, not sure how it's still around. The pod made it to 200. We're hashtag grinding, you keep subscribing. Mac is back, backpack, see Web will text us back. Katrina, Big Stir, Jones will get Seersucker. Quick change story time, let's take a vacay from life. Thursday, throw the ball, no game in Omaha. Dick Bedore spinning tails, since no Grubar Jones fails. Snickers, Crispers, Blues Bros, where did Lime Skittles go? Cooter, that's his name, Adam knows the rap game. Jones bumps photos, what rocks El Paso?
The pod made it to 200. Not sure how it's still around. The pod made it to 200. We're hashtag grinding, you keep subscribing. Roadhouse Challenge, Footloose, Mr. Honkers, he's a goose. Rubbins racing, Spotterville's amazing. Shorter open time is gone, we even had Ed Cota on. Lifetime, pants is crime, how can you justify? Jones's dance at center court, Lil Sebastian was so short. RZA, Adams list, see you later, Big Red.
The pod made it to 200. Not sure how it's still around. The pod made it to 200. We're hashtag grinding, you keep subscribing. Looking cool with Hang Loose, B-Rob teaches Jones to shoot. Creighton, Weed, Fight, Tar Heel Bird takes flight. Kersey joins on tourney week, Sherry is now Patty. JC Penny is here, cause me. AJ Blue, Starbucks, ear erasers get stuck. Restaurant grades, pod shakes, Nate Britt, Jones's face. Monty's office, senior speech, take my breath away scenes. Two babies, seeing double, working for the bubble.
Pod made it to 200. Not sure how it's still around. The pod made it to 200. We're hashtag grinding, you keep subscribing. Subscribing, 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 subscribing.
Don't forget to rate the pod as well. Rate there on iTunes. Just give us those 5 stars. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @Carolina_pod. Shoot us an email at carolinainsiderpod@gmail.com. 200 episodes down, and we're just getting started. But for now, well, let's let Katrina tell you.
See you later, Big Grit.
From inside the film room, this is Jake Lawler and Zach Goins.
See you later, Big Grits.
See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.